Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm Pam Stack. Tonight, oh, at the last minute, I got the best news. Not only do I have the brilliant Rachel Hauser Hall on with me, but Kay Kendall, who is also a fabulous author, has agreed to be with me on the show. Don't go away. This is going to be spectacular. Happy Friday the 13th. It's a lunar evening, apparently, a full moon. It's a long weekend, which is great. Gives you more time now to get not only Rachel Hall's book, but Kay Kendall's books. So you have plenty to read to fill up your time during this weekend. We are celebrating female crime fiction writers this month on Authors on the Air. And boy, have we had some magnificent guests. And that trend continues tonight with Rachel and with Kay Kendall. First of all, I'd like to tell you a little bit about my guest. Rachel Hauser Hall was born in Los Angeles. She has a lovely bio on her website. You'll have to go and look at it. But she has had some really interesting jobs. She wrote for the Penn Center, USA West, Civil Liberties Union, the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, City of Hope, and Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. But then her debut novel called A Quiet Storm actually turned into a roar. It was published by Scribner and got glowing reviews from O Magazine, Publishers Weekly, Library Journal, and was chosen for Rory's Book Club, which those of you in the know about the Gilmore Girls and Rory. It is just amazing. She writes police procedurals that have gotten such good reviews in Amazon and all the other book review sites. I don't even know where to start to talk to her about that. In the meantime, I'm so excited to welcome Rachel Hauser Hall to the show. Rachel, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for graciously agreeing to be with me tonight.
I am so honored to be here and to be asked. This is wonderful. I'm excited to talk about books.
Oh, please. Readers were clamoring for you when we did the call out for female authors. Your name came up more often than anybody. So here you are, and I'm thrilled about it. But I have a special guest for you also. My dear friend and beloved historical author, the fantastic Kay Kendall, is going to join us tonight. And for those of you who have been living under a rock and don't know about the Austin Star books, shame on you. I am so proud to welcome my guest host for tonight, because she's going to take over the microphone from me in a few minutes, Kay Kendall. Kay, welcome back to Authors on the Air.
Thanks, Pam. It's great to be here. Excuse me. Hi, Rachel.
I am so happy to have you here, Kay. I'm thrilled. The three of us were talking before the show started. Women crime fiction writers just kick ass, and women in general kick ass. And, you know, it seems like we've all had our little trials and tribulations over the past year and come out just smoking hot, and I'm so glad. I want to kind of start off by asking you a question I ask everyone, but I think I know your answer, and it was fascinating to me to research you, Rachel. Tell me about your love of writing. Where did you get that from?
I would say my mother and my older brother, I saw them with books, and I saw them writing constantly, just, you know, in journals, for class, for just pleasure. And I remember loving the feel of pen against paper. And there was one moment in my life, I would say maybe elementary school, when my older brother had his yearbook. I would go through his yearbook and highlight his name and write his name. And so I was just tagging everything. And then finally someone, probably my mom, gave me some really nice, a nice journal and some pens, and that was it. I wanted to tell stories. And I haven't
Wonderful.
Since. Yeah, so my hey. Family feel my love of writing.
How lovely. I like to write the physical act of writing also. I like that. I'm not a storyteller like you. But, Kay, refresh everyone's memory, because you've been a guest on my show before, and you've called in and participated in some of the interviews as well. But you did not start writing stories real early. You were doing a different kind of writing, weren't you?
Yes. I had a career in corporate communications, so I always wrote, but a different kind of writing.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, one of my majors in college was English literature.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not in, back in my day, in the late 60s, there weren't creative writing programs. My mother thought I should go into journalism, and I'll tell you, the tension between my mother and me, she told me I should go into journalism. By gosh, I was going to run the other way. So, so I kind of came late to writing fiction, but it dawned on me about 12 years ago, and I wanted to write about the 60s from a fictional point of view, which is what I did. And so I have two books out. And it was a way to give some history, some areas that I thought were worth exploring and reminding people that they were important, but to put them in fiction so that people might pick up some real stuff while solving a couple of crimes along with it. And that works for me, and I read a lot of historical mysteries. I love
it. It's weird, because for me, I didn't realize that I could be a novelist, actually, until I started at Penn Center USA West, which is basically it's Amnesty International, but for writers. So I was surrounded by writers who were just, you know, they were regular people. When, you know, growing up, you think novelists. I mean, I came up on Sidney Sheldon and Jackie Collins. So they were these glamorous people that were in my world. But, you know, Gary Phillips and Eric Lax and all these incredible regular people. And it's like, well, if they can do it, maybe I can do this too. Because
I think that's a really good point. You have to see somebody else doing something, and then you think, I can. So when I was growing up, there weren't a lot of female writers. There was John Updike and Saul Bellow, and I was in the middle of Kansas, and I didn't know any authors who wrote books of any kind.
Right.
And how could I dare do anything like that? And it just seemed, and it was like I was sitting at the bottom of the mountain looking up and revering these gods. No goddesses, just gods. And then the goddesses came in the 70s, but by that time I had a kid and a career and I was busy. So, you know, everything can unfold in good time if you can stay open to stuff.
Right, and for Rachel,
I'm sorry, you know, I just want to pull one little thread, and then I'm going to turn my microphone over to Kay to go ahead and interview you. But something you said, or that Kay said, was very interesting. You know, so Sidney Sheldon, Jackie Collins, who your writing inspirations were not those people, though, because that's a generation way before you. Who were your writing inspirations for who then?
They were those two, but I wanted to write something important like Toni Morrison, but I didn't want to be, you know, as elevated as that. So I wanted to join that with like Stephen King mixed with Raymond Chandler. So I'm a mutt when it comes to writing. So there weren't you know, necessarily that kind of mix, especially for an African-American woman, especially a young woman.
Right.
So that's why I picked up the pen, because it's like, well, I want to write it because I want to read it. And if there's a need, then maybe I can fill this need. In my first book, you know, I dipped my toe in suspense and mystery, but it was still, you know, it was considered, you know, psychological suspense. So it took me my second self-published novel, No One Knows You're Here, to even gain the courage to write a procedural, because, you know, I'm not a cop.
Interesting.
I didn't know any cops. And so how dare I, you know, write something that's specialized, but I'm not many things. I mean,
and I imagine your experience with cops was very different than any other writer's experience with cops. As you said, being an African-American woman, you had a completely different experience with police in Los Angeles than, say, Michael Conley has with his, you know, character when
right.
he was a beat reporter
right.
for the L.A. cops. So
right.
interesting
it's,
to me.
That was a barrier. That was a barrier because, you know, what's happening now has always happened with the community,
sure.
the colors, communities of color and law enforcement. So it's, you know, straddling the line of we love you and we need you to fear. And so when I was thinking about a character, Lou Norton, I wanted her to have that experience that many African Americans have in the cities where you respect the police, but at the same time, you cock an eyebrow at it because you've either seen it up close or you know someone who has been harassed and stopped and all the rest of it. And, you know, I was at UC Santa Cruz. I was in my last year of college when my beloved city burned down because of, you know, the Rodney King verdict. So
wow.
I wanted to put all of that into the books, into the character that I love and the city that I love.
Does your character have your sensibility about being an African-American writer? Does she have
does she have
that sensibility as a detective is what I was trying to get out of my poorly worded mouth.
I think she does. I think she knows the story. I think she, like writers, how we are, we are vampires and are interested in stealing the souls of people that we're watching and eavesdropping on. I think she has that, and I think good detectives in general have to be, they have to study people and know motivations and willing to write the story before the story's written. So, yes, I she is like me in that, but she's also braver because I am not going into dark alleys and stopping cars
right.
and asking questions because people are crazy.
Well,
so I just write about them.
Yes, they are.
I just
write
about them.
Coming,
yeah.
coming from Miami, I understand exactly the sentiment, although L.A. is a much bigger city, but, you know, we may be across the country from each other, but I understand exactly what you're talking about. I'm going to invite Kay Kendall to come in and take the microphone for a bit. I am
okay.
so
oh,
happy
I'm,
to be
I'm
able
delighted to do that. Just a year ago,
Rachel
and I met. We each joined the National Board of the Mystery Writers of America, and we were in New York
Yay.
City. And we're not there this year, clearly, because they're meeting right now, and I miss them all. But I think it's nice that you and I have this chance to talk, Rachel.
Yeah.
I met
I
you,
so happy.
And I met your husband and your darling daughter, and I
yeah.
had not read your work before. So I came home, and I bought and read your first Lou Norton book. It's a detective Eloise Norton called
right.
Lou, and I enjoyed it very much. And then I read the second one, and I liked them both.
Right.
And then this new one, the one that came out, Trail of Echoes, and I think the spring of 2016,
right.
oh, my Lord, you knocked it out of the park. What
oh,
a
thank you.
Fast book. I do not, as a rule, read a lot of police procedurals because most of them, to my taste, don't have a lot of character development. There's a lot
right.
of DNA, and there's a lot of it,
right.
you know, all that stuff. But you have Lou Norton's whole life, you know, at home with her family, with the husband, with, you know, the sister issue. You know, it's and it's wonderful. You just the whole thing. And then
thank you.
In Trail of Echoes, you take us into neighborhoods and have the feel of things that I'm learning about through your eyes, and they're all so real. You're just fabulous. And everybody who's
thank
listening
you.
Who hasn't read her books yet, you should.
Thank you very much, Kay. No, I
question that,
I love
you
writing.
Can chat.
I love writing Lou and these stories because it does give me a chance to kind of return to the neighborhood I grew up in. I know these streets and I know where she lives because I live there. And I know what it is to, you know, come up working class, but the kid or the family that, you know, we get out, we succeed, we do well, but we don't forget. So it's, again, it's therapeutic in some ways. And I like sharing the story of the LA I grew up with. I mean, all the books I read, you know, growing up on LA, they center around certain parts of Los Angeles, you know, Echo Park, downtown, Beverly Hills, everywhere except where I grew up. And there's so many stories and so many different personalities here that I wanted, you know, the world to know about. So
well,
I,
and
yeah,
you do a really great job too.
Thank you.
How do you, now you're not a cop, but you have convincing details. Have you developed your sources or your go-to people to check on details to make them right?
Yeah, nowhere near Michael Connelly. His connections with the LAPD are extraordinary. They don't give me the time of day. But I do have wonderful writing friends who are also detectives, you know, like Neil Griffith, David Putnam, and I bother them with questions all the time. And another great source for me is all the conferences that, you know, writers get to attend, like Writers Police Academy and BoucherCon, and experts come to these, the ATF agents and FBI and police detectives. And I make sure I'm the one who sits in the front row with questions ready and a pen, because I still write longhand. And I write every single thing they say. And then I read books like, you know, Miles Corwin. And I read and listen and pay attention to details. For instance, I watch The First 48. And I don't watch it for the cases or anything. I watch it because I want to see what's inside, you know, the detective's bureau. The details that I can't get off of Google. Like there was one episode where in the background, there's this coat hanger, you know, the stand-up coat rack, whatever.
Right.
And there are, like, thousands of neckties on this coat rack. And it's because, you know, cops have long hours, and therefore I will change my tie instead of my shirt, and now I have a different look. You know, so I want things like that, the pictures and the sun visors in the car and, you know, the bobbleheads on the desk. I want details to make it interesting. And for the few times I do get to talk to female cops, you know, I ask them very personal questions, biological questions, sex questions, those things that, once again, that I cannot get off of Google. I don't ask about guns, and I don't ask about the DNA stuff because there are books on that. But,
right.
you know, how do you stay at a crime scene for hours and hours and hours and you gotta pee? What do you do? What do you
right.
do as a woman with all that kind of thing? So, you know, at first they're like, did you just ask that? But then it's like, well, this is what I do, because it is a part of being a female, you know, in law. So, yeah, I get really nosy when I can.
That's
what writers do. Yeah.
When you first began writing about Detective Lou Norton, did you
mm-hmm.
see it original? Well, you must have seen it at least as a two-book series because
yes.
of the overarching issue with her sister. But Digi is developing into a multi-book series.
No, that was prayer. That was, please, please let me continue writing these because there's so many stories to tell. And even with the first one, you know, I didn't know what that last sentence was until I wrote it, which meant that I needed to do the next book.
And right.
Fortunately, my incredible agent, Jill Marshall, she got my incredible editor, Kristen Sevick, to buy, you know, two books and then another two books. So the wonderful thing about crime, there will always be crime, and I will never be short of stories. And the wonderful thing about Los Angeles is the city's damn big. So I can, even though I like staying in my zone over here in the Crenshaw area, if I want it, you know, I could go somewhere else. But I like it here. So maybe I'll have, you know, Lou go to Hawaii one day, and that's an excuse for me to do some research.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
true. So there are three to date published
uh-huh.
about
uh-huh.
Lou Norton and her partner, Colin, from, I think, is it Colorado?
Colorado
yeah.
Springs.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
he seems to be coming along. His consciousness is raising slowly.
Uh-huh.
And for people who haven't read the books, he's younger, I think, than she is.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and he is Caucasian, and he
uh-huh.
has some attitudes that every once in a while she has to slap down because he's not so nice to people sometimes.
Right.
You have a fourth one, no doubt, in the works.
Yes.
And when will that be coming towards us eager readers?
City of Saviors, which is the fourth in a city series, is coming out August 8th of this year.
Oh, good.
And it's a different story in some ways. It's a story about an old guy that dies in his hoarded house. And so it deals with, you know, neglected seniors, but it also takes a look at church and how these kind of like pay-to-play, give God money and he'll do all these things. The prosperity churches, it takes a look at that. So I guess when I was writing it, I was pissed off about some church thing. So that's how I tend to write. Something has to kick me the hell off to like get through 90,000 words. It has to really fuel me.
True.
And I really have, because it is a lot. To 90,000 words, man. And I write my first draft longhand. So I am a dinosaur in that way. So I have to love what it is that I'm writing about.
That's fascinating because you have to be the youngest author I've come across who still writes in longhand. Somebody who's 80 or over 75 or, you know, up there in years, I can understand. But you, my dear, you like the feel of pen and paper, I guess.
I do, and I'm a pen snob. I recently discovered Office Depot's tool pens, and they bring me so much joy. And it also comes out of kind of necessity. I still work full-time. And I have a 12-year-old daughter. And so my life is incredibly busy, and it's easier sometimes to have a legal pad and pen with me at soccer practice or doctor's appointment or wherever than lugging a computer around. And also writing longhand just gives me the license for it to suck. You know, with the computer, you feel so formal, and there are all those little red squiggly lines to correct this and here, and then, you know, you want to go check on the internet, a pen and paper, you can just write, and you write in the margins, and it gives you license for it to be bad and to cross out and have it to be ugly. And I need that kind of freedom because, you know, writing's hard, and I have writing heroes too. Like Pam was saying, I worship writers, and when I read them, it's like, I can't do this. I suck. But, you know, writing longhand gives me the chance to to clean it all up and make it better and do it in private. It feels like an audience when I'm writing on a computer.
Can I just share a little interesting thing, Kay, excuse me, about writing? I met Neil Gaiman at a book signing, and he talked about writing. He handwrites out his manuscripts also, and he does a really interesting thing. He's a pen person. I am too, so I really could relate to it. He's a very interesting man, but he'll spend one day writing in one color of a pen, and then the next day he writes in a different color. And he said that way he can actually visualize his productivity.
See the progress.
It isn't because
I do too.
Yeah, he can see how much he's written, and then he just feels more comfortable. That's how he's always written like that. Believe it or not, there are actually a lot of authors I speak to who do that. They're more comfortable writing in longhand first. Kay, you know Simon Wood, who's out in California. He's a great thriller writer.
Yeah.
You know Simon, too, don't you, Rachel? So he's a doll. He'll be a guest coming up soon. But he writes in longhand also because he's dyslexic, and his wife has to interpret it, and then she does it on the computer for him. I know a lot of people who do that, who actually write in longhand. So I think that's, when I was reading your bio, Rachel, you said, for as long as you can remember, I've had a pen in my hand. I've had pen to paper. It just makes sense that the habit that's most comfortable for you is the one you've stuck with. It's working.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. And, I look back on my childhood, and I remember, and my daughter's doing this right now, I would just make lists of things. We'd sit and, watch Dance Fever or Solid Gold, and I would write down the commercials, or I would write the 50 states with the capitals. I was always just writing and making lists and remembering things. And it's just a natural part of me. It's so bad that last year for our anniversary, our 20th anniversary, my husband got me like a $100 gift certificate to Office Depot and a write away weekend at the Langham so I could just be alone and write. Because he knows.
How wonderful.
Much. Just some pens and post-it notes.
I love the fact that you said that you you keep lists of things because you're engaging different parts of your brain by writing too.
Yeah.
So you're writing one time and then you're inputting it into a computer, which is a great way to edit, by the way.
Right.
And so it simply makes sense to me. You can scribble something out a lot faster than you can backspace. Don't you think?
Right. I think so. And again, when I'm on the 405 freeway in traffic, I have a little notepad by me and I'm writing as I'm, sitting in traffic. So when I have real time to write, it really comes out concentrated, because it's been stewing, since that last time that I did get to have a full burst of writing. And in that way, I think having a full-time job helps me because it's discipline. I write in my daytime job, so I have a muscle. And you need a muscle to keep at this every day because it can be a slog. It can be a slog, but I love this slog. I love writing. I really, really do. I love books.
You like the physicality of writing as well as the creative aspects, don't you?
I do.
I bet you have a callus on your writing finger, too.
I do.
I have one.
Yes, and I have a mole right there.
My writing finger has been, kind of odd-looking since I was a kid in parochial school, in Catholic school, because I loved writing with fountain pens. So, it sounds so funny, but it does engage different parts of your brain, and you're just ultra-creative like that. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
Kay, you don't handwrite, but you take a lot of notes, though, don't you? I recall you and I talking about this. When you had ideas or you heard something or you saw something and it just struck you, you're constantly writing notes also, aren't you?
Yes, and my first manuscript that will never see the light of day, right. For good reason, I would be driving to and from work in the lousy Houston traffic, so we share bad traffic, Rachel. I got a little tiny tape recorder, and I'd have a thought, and I would just click it on, and I'd put the thought down, and then I'd come home and transcribe it. I have read since, you know, I mentioned earlier that I didn't know any writers, so how did I respected them too much to think that I could do it myself. After I started trying to be a writer, I started coming across articles that said, here are traits that writers have in common. One of the things is you're noticing all the time.
Yeah.
And whether or not you write down your notes, you're taking it all in. And
yeah.
I thought, that's my excuse. That's why I've always eavesdropped. Because,
there you go.
I train
well,
my
husband.
I think
writers are natural snoops. You're a natural group of snoops anyway. You are. And I'm naturally snoopy because I want to talk to everybody and know all their little secrets, you know, when they come on the show. So I respect that about you writers. You know, there's no scene or conversation you can't see or overhear that you can't twist into a what-if scenario and it ends up in a thriller. So, you know, God bless you for that. I totally get that. Rachel, you have also another good point, and I want to kind of yank that thread too. You said that because you like having a full-time job, and because therefore you're very disciplined and you're very creative, and when you hit the pad to write, you are really cranking it out by then. You are in full zone mode because your time is so valuable to you. You're not only are you this extraordinary writer, but you're a mommy. You're a wife, you're an employee, you're a friend, you are maybe a daughter or a granddaughter or a sister. Mm-hmm. So you wear a lot of different hats, and to compartmentalize all those things, you really do. And unless you're joking around about writing, I would imagine you have to be very disciplined. And obviously you are because you've got a ton of books out right now. I mean, in the short period of time since you first published. And so good for you on that. Again, your creative side is just all over the place. I want to ask you a question, and then I'm gonna turn it back over to Kay. But I know Kay's voice is a little raw. I know that, you know, illness has been flying all around, so I'm kind of giving her a little break. But first, I want to tell everyone, please call in and say hello to Rachel and to say hello to Kay. I'm glad to put you on the radio. Whoever calls in and has questions for Rachel is going to get her new book. The number is 347-633-9609. And I'll say it again, 347-633-9609. Please call in and say hi to Rachel and say hi to Kay Kendall. This is her first appearance out and about, so to speak. I love the fact that you two seemed kind of simpatico. You're almost on the same page, even though you write totally different styles and books, completely different. So I also wanted to mention about note-taking and putting things on the little recorder, because, you know, you could do that on your phone now. I read recently that if you have an idea, if you don't write it down right away, then that idea is gone forever. It is how your brain functions. So I would imagine you're a note taker too, Rachel.
I am.
Or things that you observe and that you hear.
Definitely. From the post-it note to the voice memo on my phone to Evernote. I absolutely love
Evernote.
I actually had to to renew my subscription because I'm a power user for Evernote. Because you're right, it does flit away. It comes at the muse's whisper, and if you don't capture it, it's gone. And, you know, with me doing so much in a day, I am tired. And so my brain, I can't rely on recalling that all the time. So, yeah, I have to take notes. But then that just gives me a chance to write things down, which I like doing. That's just a natural part of me. And then,
how has your writing affected your daughter, by the way? Oh, I'm sorry. Then you have it stored.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, I want. Is your daughter interested in writing and reading?
She does, poor thing, because she'll write something and she'll share it with me. And, you know, when she got older, like starting fourth grade, I would say, well, why did the person do this? Why did the girl jump over the cat or something random? Because I want her to see that story is more than just putting, you know, words on the page. I want her to think analytically. And, you know, there's one thing that I do with her that we still do, and it started out kind of innocently, you know, crime writer. So in Los Angeles, there's always an ambulance or a helicopter, police helicopter, something. And one time, and we still do this, we drove by a crime scene. And I asked her, you know, what did you just see as we're driving past? And she told me, and I would ask, you know, was it an LAPD car or was it an LA sheriff's car? Was the person who was in the black Jetta wearing pants or skirt? So I want her to pay attention, not just because of creativity, but as a woman growing up in this world, I want her to be aware of her surroundings. I want her to see
brilliant.
And to remember and to look for things. And, you know, nothing scares me more than seeing young girls walking alone on the street with the phone to their face and not being aware of their surroundings. So
or with the earbuds
to,
in. Their earbuds in and they're listening to music. Oh, my God. You know,
right.
It's like, how can you not be aware? You'd never hear if someone came up behind you.
Right, and I write crime, so I'm writing this bad story in my head, and so I want her to be able to think past the obvious and then tell me what you see, and then if you want to keep writing, and she does write, and she writes lovely dark stories because she's my daughter, she's my husband's daughter, and we both like dark, interesting stories, and you know, it's a weird thing, but she is a creative.
How
thing.
Wonderful. May
yeah.
I ask you what your husband's profession is, please?
Yeah,
is
sure.
he a creative
he is,
also?
He is. He has his degree in illustration, and he's the VP of digital for the Oprah Winfrey Network. And so he is my own. Mm-hmm. I would say he's my only reader, and I actually more read to him than anything, and he's the one who tells me to go darker because he knows I write it, but I'm scared of the dark. I'm scared of the crazy, but I want to write it. I want to tell people about it because I know it's there, and he tells me, no, you have to go darker.
Did you just say you read it to him?
Yeah.
You read?
I love that. Yeah.
Once again, you're engaging another part of your brain.
Uh-huh.
I, as a reader, I am a voracious reader. People who listen to this show know that. I read in a bunch of different genres. I love all kinds of books. But that's the thing I love the most. When I get a book that is so well written that it makes so much sense to me that I want to read it out loud, I know I'm looking at a potential book of the year when the story is just that well written. And I don't know how someone – to me, if you're writing dialogue, it's absolutely critical for
you to hear. You have to hear the rhythm. Right. And once again, it's another opportunity.
You have to hear the words.
Error.
I mean – all of your characters have all different nuances, right? So they're going to speak in a different tone, in a different timbre.
Yeah.
And
if you're bored reading parts of it, then you have a problem because you don't want to have to rush through this part. If you have to rush through that part, then you suck and you need to take that out. And reading aloud makes me hear the suck parts, and I will take it out. And he will also say, yeah, that was kind of either cheated or I was bored or what did that even mean? And, you know, sometimes I get pissed off because it's like, well, this is hard and I'm tired and, you know, no one likes to hear, you know, someone crapping on their work. But I trust him because if I make it, we all make it, And he's been on this journey with me for, you know, 21 years. And he wants the best for me because, you know, he cares about me, not just because he's my husband, but he's my friend. And he's a creative and loves good story. We like good story.
Let me clarify something.
I'm going to bring Kay back into the conversation now, and I'm going to sit back. Go right ahead, Kay.
Let me just clarify. So if he's your one reader, does that mean that nobody else sees your manuscript but your husband before you send it to your agent?
To my agent.
To the publisher?
Correct. Right.
Wow.
I trust his judgment utmost because he can be devastatingly honest. And that's what I want. Like I said, it may hurt, but I trust his judgment. His point of view comes from an unfiltered place. And sometimes I will actually send parts to that. So, yeah, he's not the only one. Sometimes I send to my older brother, who is also, he loves words and he loves story. And he's very good at the expertise part, the law part. So
I send to him too.
So yeah,
you know, it's a fad these days
group.
To have the writing groups and your beta readers and all that. But you know what? Time consuming. So what the process that works for you is very streamlined, and you're spending time with your spouse while also working on your writing.
Yeah.
So I think that's brilliant.
It's a brilliant. So do I. I agree. It is a brilliant way to have your book critiqued and edited. By the way, how many edits do you do on your manuscript?
I would say by the time I send it off to Jill, I'm on my 7th draft because I count the written parts too. Yeah.
Right.
And it just, you know, when I write at lunchtime, I write very early in the morning, the weekend. And so I don't get, you know, a lot of time. So sometimes I will scribble bad stuff down just to know that I have written something and that I can come back. So, you know, it takes me a moment to get it where I feel it's good that I can share it with other people. Yeah.
Do you outline at all, Rachel? Any outline?
Oh,
you do.
I do.
Are you a copious outliner or do you do kind of an overview?
I'm a copious because I like work. I like maps. I like knowing where I'm going the next day. I am, like you were saying, I'm hella disciplined. I need it because that's how I know that I'm making progress. If I can check off my that note card that I did that scene, I'm happy and I feel productive. So yeah, I like outlining.
Kay, I have to tell you, I don't. Speaking to Rachel,
the previous week and edit, or do you write the first draft and then go back and edit? Or a mix?
I do a mix. The first draft is on, you know, the legal pad. And then I will transcribe after, like, section one. I'll go back and transcribe it. But it's transcription, and I'm not, like, full editing unless I'm doing it as I type. And then I leave it and then go to the next section, handwrite, transcribe, and then the next section. And then I will go back and do notes. I would say I kind of learned that from Stephen King on writing. About leaving books, your manuscript alone for a while. So So I like getting a little distance, not too much because I don't have time for, you know, a full month of it sitting. And I don't think I could resist, you know, not touching it for that long. And I don't have the time.
Rachel, I want to say to you that, you know, I do a lot of author interviews and I don't think I've ever spoken to such a young novelist as yourself who is so immersed in the entire process of writing a book, not just the creative process too. This is a physical thing for you with the way pen feels on paper, all of it. You seem to engage every one of your senses
to just about. I mean, I don't know if you're eating and that's real important to you, or drinking coffee too, but because, you know, those things might be in your wheelhouse and they might be in your writer's toolbox. I don't know. But you seem to really engage a lot of different senses that, and that's, I'm certain, the reason why you have such fantastic reviews.
Well,
I cannot tell you how impressed I am and how honored I am that you have been on this show. Kay, last thoughts for Rachel before we kind of wrap things up here.
Well, last time she was in Houston at Mystery Bookstore, Murder by the Book, we asked her, that was about a year ago or maybe not that much, we asked her if we were going to see Detective Lou Norton on a small or a large screen. And there were hopes in that regard. And I wondered if we had moved farther along that line.
We're moved a little farther. Hollywood's a totally different animal than publishing.
Oh, yeah.
Everything takes forever, and you're walking in place, and you're moving forward. And they're pitching it as we speak. It's a very smart team of women who are just amazing in their own creative rights. And I really do hope someone says, you know, that would look great on TV, because it would be. They're great stories. And I think it's time for a woman, an African-American woman who is a homicide detective, telling L.A. stories. So,
I agree.
I do too. I think it's magnificent.
Walter Mosley, actually.
Huh?
I'm thinking of Shonda Rhimes.
And I'm thinking I see you as the sister to Shonda Rhimes. So, you know, I love it. I love it. I want to, first of all, thank my beautiful friend, Kay Kendall, for agreeing at this very last minute to be my guest host tonight.
Thank you, Kay.
I loved it. It was great.
I can't thank you enough. You've got to come back, because you're so good at this stuff. You've got to come back and do this again. Will you, please?
Of course I will. Yes. Sure.
You're a doll.
And
Rachel,
I look forward to seeing you both at a mystery conference soon in 2017.
Soon. Yes.
We're going to have to do that. And so we'll make sure of that for sure. Rachel, you are magnificent. Please tell everyone where they can find you on the webs.
On the webs, rachelhowell.com. That's RACHELHOW, ZSNZebraELL.com. And you can find my books in all bookstores, brick and mortar, and on the web. I'm everywhere.
And you tweet, and you also respond on your Facebook page.
I do.
In your limited time that you have for communication with the outside world, I'm honored that you took so much time to speak to me tonight, and that I'm glad you kind of rolled with the punches on having Kay as a surprise, but she was just so generous in agreeing
to come on.
And what's not to love, right?
Thank you so much for bringing me on. I had a ball.
Oh, please come back. And let me just say this. I make this offer all the time, and I hope you take me up on it, because Kay always does, and it makes me feel wonderful. I'd love to have you take the microphone and interview someone that you like. So when you think of an author that you want
to
interview, would you come back and do that?
I will certainly do that. Thank you for the offer. Yes, I would do that. I love that.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. And folks, on Monday, the terrific Barbara Nicholas is with me, and it's going to be a really great week. I think I have 4 or 5 interviews lined up. So Female Crime Fiction Writers continues. Have a great weekend. You have to get Rachel Housel Hall's books, and you've got to go and get Kay Kendall's books. These are two terrific female crime fiction writers that you don't want to not have in your library. Go and do it. Ladies, thank you so much. I think you're magnificent, and I'm so honored you were with me. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the long, the 13th, the lunar setting, and the wonderful extra day off, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. You too.
Kim.
Thank you.
Bye, Rachel.
Good night.
Good night.
And thanks for being with me tonight, folks. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.